This is WABE's LitCast, a podcast highlighting Atlanta's live literature and storytelling scene. I'm Mike Johns. Thank you for listening. This week, a story from musician Billy Guin about youthful folly and casual vandalism. Plus, a week's worth of live lit events, workshops, book signings, all the stuff that you need to know to really get into Atlanta's literary scene. All right, this week's story comes from Billy Guin. He is an Atlanta musician. In May of 2013, he braved the stage of the Naked City Open Mic Reading Series. We've featured them in episodes past. Basically, every month there is a theme and writers are invited to show up with work on that topic. And if their name is drawn, they get 5 minutes at the microphone. This particular month's theme was panic. And for that, Billy Guin looked back on a childhood of casual vandalism.
I was 5 and my brother Walter 7 when he and his best friend Peter figured out how to make slingshots from Y-shaped sticks and rubber bands. I caught on too. The problem with boys and weaponry is that target selection requires more cognitive insight than most of us are capable of in our single-digit years. Compounding the issue is the superconducting magnetic allure of anything breakable or expensive. My brother and I were gathering rocks by the street when the van came into view. I couldn't catch a ball, I'm spacey, and I have a bad eye, so even when I was paying attention, I couldn't judge how far to reach. So when I impulsively pulled back my rubber band and nailed the passing van with a loud, resonating metallic clank like a dumpster being hit with a hammer, we were both stunned. Walter was more stunned than me, though, and was left alone to face the understandably angry driver, who stopped to inquire just what the hell we kids thought we were doing while I ran to safety. We would discover the wrist rocket, a metal-framed, reinforced engineering marvel of a slingshot with a leather ammunition saddle and giant double rubber band. It made use of half your forearm for additional leverage and stability. You could pull its rubber band back at least 8 inches, and it was affordable on allowance. Our friend Stuart got one, too. That Christmas, we'd gotten a pachinko, a small Japanese pinball game, kind of like a slot machine, that dispersed marble-sized stainless steel balls for its jackpot. Our parents couldn't understand where all those metal balls kept going. Nothing sat more perfectly in or traveled farther or more accurately from the saddles of our wrist rockets than those pachinko balls. Kids can be mean. They could tell something was wrong with my eye, for example, and sometimes they'd poke at it or make fun of it. Anything different about you can set off trouble. Our neighborhood was mostly white, but we had Hicks, Yankees, Jews, Christians, even African Americans next door. We played with everybody. No thoughts of nationality, color, or religion. But Peter, our slingshot building friend from across the street, moved away. We missed him, and a Chinese family rented his old house. Had we known any Chinese kids, we'd have been happy to play with them, but this family didn't seem to have any, and so they were strangers, and different in a way we hadn't yet seen. When Walter and Stuart shared their idea to shoot our slingshots at the Chinese neighbor's house where Peter used to live, I thought, awesome, let's get started. I know it sounds like all kinds of but I was only shooting at the roof. Windows never occurred to me. It also didn't occur to me that our victims would perceive our actions as hatred. More immediately, it didn't occur to me that they might be home. Surely my brother and our accomplice, both older than me, would have properly scoped the place and determined its occupancy before opening fire. During the assault, which happened a mere 200 feet from the target, during daylight, and lasted at least 15 minutes, we stood behind Mom's car. More cover wouldn't have hurt, but an empty house was a given, so no need to duck down. Towards the end of the attack, though, my brother and his friend noticed faces peering around the curtains. I hit some windows, declared Walter worriedly. So did I, Stuart underscored. I could hardly believe what I was hearing. Windows. We shot so many balls. And what do you mean they're home? I mean, how could this be? Why am I even doing this? This means big trouble. Whose f*** up is this? I was only 6, but I knew if we could see them, they could see us, and we were busted. Fear, stupidity, guilt, consequences. What would Mom and Dad say? What would they do? Were the Chinese neighbors going to come over now? How about the police? Could we go to jail? They were going to ask why we did it. What would we say? I don't know. It was worse than a few broken windows. The Chinese neighbors moved out, and we had committed a hate crime. But my immediate problems were an impending visit by my victims and my mother, who used to be a nun. She was Catholic, strict, violent. She's little, but she's mean as hell, my dad often told his friends. Some of her catchphrases included, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, come here to me. I will snatch you bald-headed. And she would. We ran upstairs and hid, but when the assaulted came over to confront us little Walter was the one with the courage and wherewithal to let them have their way with him then, while Mom and Dad were away at work, rather than later, when our parents would be home. Astonishingly, it worked. Stuart and I heard 10 minutes of angry words from our hiding place, and then it was over, save for the moving trucks. A few years ago, I was practicing music for a coffee house I'd booked with a Chinese American. She was buying a house, and we talked about different neighborhoods around town. She told me she'd had a rough time living outside the perimeter as a kid. OTP's not so bad, I said, but she became agitated. People out there hated us just because we were Chinese. They even vandalized our house. I felt myself go clammy. Gosh, really? I tried to sound surprised. That's just awful. I can't believe that. I wanted to restore some of her battered faith in humanity. You must have lived near some really big I don't think most people are mean like that. I could have brought up a current movie, asked how her spicy basil leaves were tasting, or begun a pedantic but riveting new thread about the use of extended chords in pop music. But there was a river before me, and I could potentially bathe in it. Take responsibility. We could have a bonding talk about race relations and conflict resolution, and, well, she might appreciate the chance to face her family's assailant after all these years. Hey, what suburb was that anyway? But my heart started pounding. Why did I just ask that? What if it was her family? Do I even have the guts to admit it was me? Terrible idea. Ugh, just don't say Marietta. I thought some more. If this little therapy session doesn't go well, we're still gonna have to play this f***ing show together. Please don't say Marietta. She intoned, bitterly, disgustedly. Roswell.
Billy Guin there, reading at Naked City in May of 2013. Naked City takes place on the first Monday of every month at the Warhorse Cafe at the Goat Farm Arts Center. September's theme is Revolution. Okay, on to the coming week's calendar. First, an event that we mentioned last week, Sunday, August 17th, Vita Voce. This is a monthly reading and performance series featuring women at the Mint Gallery, hosted by Sherry Caudell. Readings this month featuring Madeline St. Romain, Amy Stufflebeam, whose work you may have read in The 500, Sheena Louise Rotman, A.C. Smallwood, and Elizabeth Sitek. Performance art by Stephanie Farr and Xander Alexander. Music by Grace Bellery. This is taking place at the Mint Gallery at 7 p.m. and it is free. Monday, August 18th, Story Slam at the Roswell Cultural Arts Center. This month's theme, School Ties. Each event offers 10 lucky storytellers the opportunity to dazzle with their stories in 5 minutes or less. Doors are at 6:30, show at 7. It is $10 at the door. Wednesday, August 20th, Scene Missing presents the Atlantable Hulk. Full disclosure, I am one of the producers on this show. This is writing, comedy, and other performances based on comic book movies hosted by Jason Mallory. This month featuring Corey Byram, he's the host of the Iceberg Storytelling Series. Randy Osborne, he is a producer of Carapace. From Dad's Garage, John Carr and The Dark Side of the Room. Comedians Chris Ledford, John Michael Bond, and Ruthie Lichtenstein. Plus Burlesque from Stephanie Farley of the Hot Toddies Cabaret. This is $10. It is taking place at 9 p.m. at the Highland Ballroom. Wednesday, August 20th, What's New in Poetry at Emory, this month featuring Jen McCreary, Chris McCreary, Frank Sherlock, and Ryan X. This is taking place at the Emory Bookstore at 8 p.m. And we are looking ahead at a seemingly quiet weekend in Atlanta Live Lit. But before that, Wednesday, August 20th, there is a workshop with award-winning Atlanta memoirist and writing instructor Jessica Handler at Acapella Books. This is the author of Invisible Sisters and Braving the Fire. She's giving a workshop on writing about grief. The workshop costs $20 to $30. Registration is required, and you can do that in-store, online, or by phone by calling 404-681-5128. All right, that is the week in Atlanta Live Lit. A lot there to help you warm up for the onslaught of the Decatur Book Festival and or Dragon Con, whichever one you're planning on attending. For details and links to all of this stuff, you can check the website wabe.org/litcast. So that's our show. Many thanks to Jason Parker and Dan Raby from WABE's digital department and to Kimberly Harbrecht from AtlantaPlanet.com for help with our calendar. Our director of digital and social media is Cassandra Douglas. Our music is from Atlanta bands Ocelot, Book Club, and Jeffrey Bootser. I'm your host, Mike Johns. The Litcast is a production of 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's NPR station. Keep writing, keep reading. We'll see you next week.